What were you born to do? Every human being is born for a purpose. What's yours? The Giftedness Center has helped thousands of people find and follow their purpose by discovering their giftedness, not just what they can do, but what they were born to do. Knowing your giftedness is the key to making wise choices for how you work and how you live your life. Visit thegiftednesscenter.com or call 214-665-9581. The Giftedness Center, an affiliate of SEMA International. Isn't it about time you figured out what to do with your life? Call today, 214-665-9581.
Welcome back to Circles of Change. It's hot here in Tucson. I'm telling you, over 100 degrees. What's it like in Texas? Bill Hendricks.
Hey, I think it's coming up to 100 today.
Okay, well, you got cooler temperatures than we do, but we love it. Well, Bill, I gave in our introduction here to the show that this idea of assessments that people have gotten involved in over the years, and to my liking, is to help us understand that these aren't just tests to separate the wheat from the chaff, but actually a great way to get a light beacon, so to speak, to guide yourself forward.
That's true. There's lots and lots of assessment out there, and a lot of it can be very helpful. But you're right, you kind of have to work through the wheat and the chaff, as it were.
Well, and also the fact that this might really be, quote, a test that you can pass or fail, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, part of the problem with calling these things tests is it does make it sound like a test from back in grammar school, and you can pass or fail. And unfortunately, it's particularly made that way sometimes when you're taking one of these assessments in connection with getting hired into a job. And obviously, there's a certain natural tension about that. And so you're worried that if you don't test well, as they say, you won't get the job. And that's actually one of the problems in this kind of work, is that people obviously want to get a job. So if you're asked to take some kind of a personality inventory or something like that, you have a tendency to want to answer the questions in the way that mm-hmm. you think would be in your best interest, which then raises the question of how objective the test really has been, or the assessment. And, you know, is it possible to sort of fool the test? And some of these, it actually is. I mean, Myers-Briggs, for instance, people are very familiar with Myers-Briggs. You know, you answer two or three questions a different way, the whole outcome puts you in a whole different category. And so you have to sort of ask the question of how objective some of these assessments are that are out there. But there's tons of them out there, and more on the way all the time.
Well, and I think also it's not just that objectivity, but how can we almost control our subconscious that might want to take charge? And so, in other words, really, how can we kind of put everything at abeyance and recognize that going through an assessment process is really a gift for us to understand ourselves better? Well, you know, these things haven't always been around, right, Bill? So it's almost like, where'd they come from and why?
Well, you know, 200, 300, 400 years ago and before, I mean, people basically got into the kind of work that they did because their father or their family was in that kind of work. And, of course, let's be honest, there were fewer career options, as it were. I mean, pretty much the economy, at least in the West, was based on farms and factories. And in a farm or a factory, one strong back is as good as another.
You bet.
And so you could just kind of plug and play people, and you didn't have to worry about assessing anybody's strengths. Nobody really worried about that. But after World War II, the economy changed into what we now call information economy or knowledge work. And in that kind of an economy, you can't just plug and play people. You have to figure out the way in which each person adds and contributes value to what turn out to be some pretty sophisticated and complex organizations. And everybody has a different contribution to make. So if you're an employer, you're trying to figure out, you know, what does this person bring to the party? What's the best use of them? And assessments are an attempt to try to sort all that out and help both an employee and an employer understand what their best contribution can be.
I like your introducing that thought about plugging and playing people as if it's just an interchangeable resource. The other thing I would caution us is we oftentimes in organizations say, I have a need for an X, let's say a project engineer. And
right.
So there's that round circle, and I'm trying to find a round peg to stick in the hole. as opposed to sometimes, and oh, by the way, if we find someone that they think, well, they're still kind of square, so my job is first going to be to knock off your rough edges so you will then, quote, fit.
We can round them out.
As opposed to saying, gee, you know, yep, there's some balance to be had, but what would it look like if I tried to see how a certain opportunity could be extended so someone can bring their whole self to the opportunity?
Well, what you're getting at is kind of a core fundamental of this whole assessment thing,
mm-hmm.
and that is that human beings, certainly what I believe, I think it's probably what you believe as well, is that people actually are hardwired, if you will, in a certain way, virtually from birth. It's what we call their giftedness, these set of core strengths, natural motivations that they instinctively use to do things that are satisfying and productive, that every person has some kind of hardwiring like that, which fits them for certain tasks. Unfortunately, many, many people in our culture have the idea that people are much more malleable, that you can kind of make a person into whatever you need them to be. And so I went and did a seminar once, some training at a large corporation with about 14 mid-level managers. And these were engineers who had all been promoted into management. And as part of this, they were in management training and all kinds of stuff. When we got to the end of the day, because I was helping them sort of figure out what's that core motivation, we discovered that out of 14 of them, only about three had any intrinsic motivation and, frankly, ability to manage people. For the rest of them, it was going to be a real misfit.
Right.
And so now they were having to work out of a deficit in, you know, a new role. Of course, they were getting paid more, but it was still kind of putting that proverbial square peg in a round hole. And you can't just, as I said earlier, plug and play people that way. You have to take regard for what they really are born to do, not just what they maybe can do, but are not going to have much energy for doing.
And so just going through that experience, I've got to imagine, was a pretty liberating experience for those people, so they can actually, you know, not say where their gaps are, but I'm certain at the same time, Bill, you were actually applauding and wanting to help the organization applaud the fact that these people actually had phenomenal skills in the individual contributor senior technical space that, lo and behold, if you saddle them with other things they're not gifted to do, it's not going to let those real lights shine, which is another huge piece of what the organization needed.
Exactly. One of the limitations in most assessment that's out there is that you get a list of your so-called strengths, but then you also get a list of your so-called weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And that term weakness gets called by all kinds of different things. But basically, you're given the message that, hey, these are the parts of you that are in deficit. There's something wrong here. And then a lot of people spend a lot of time trying to shore up their weaknesses as if we don't need to pay attention to strengths. In my work, I do just the opposite. I identify the strengths of a person, celebrate those, and really help figure out how do we get those into play most of the time. And in one sense, there's no such thing as the concept of weakness for me. People are a little bit, if you can pardon the expression, like tools in the sense that each tool is designed to do a certain task and it's got certain design features that fit it for that task. If you use that tool for the purpose for which it was designed, it works perfectly. But, you know, you use a screwdriver to turn screws, but then you don't turn around and say, you know, you have a real weakness for driving nails. I mean, it's an absurd critique, and yet we do that with people all the time. We say, you know, you're great as a salesperson. You have a weakness as a manager. Well, it's only a, quote, weakness if you put that person in a managerial role without bothering to check, does this person have any motivation or ability to manage other people? If not, you're not doing them any favors by putting them in a management role.
So this is a back to the area of assessments that, as you said, there's a plethora of them out there. And so we really have to be careful then, both as individuals when we, quote, take the assessments, that it doesn't put us in a dejected place, right? But then also, you know, I can envision we've got listeners who are, you know, going in for job interviews and then taking an assessment and feeling like it is really going to be something that's going to help them or get in their way of getting the job. So how do we advise people to manage that process, Bill?
Well, I suppose one thing that a prospective employee can do to manage that process is to, before they agree to take some kind of an assessment or test from the prospective employer, ask the hiring manager, what exactly is the purpose of this test? How are you going to use the results? In other words, put a little bit of discipline in place and some boundaries, in the sense that if it's an enlightened company, most of these test results or assessment results are only one of many, many factors that are going to be considered. You know, a lot depends on the person's education, training, credentialing, their experience, the terms of employment. You know, you may be the best person for the job, but if they've got to pay you twice as much as they can afford, probably not going to get the job. Availability, sometimes we need somebody immediately, and you're available. Somebody else couldn't do it for 6 months, so we'll take you. And then there's that sort of subjective thing of, quote, chemistry. You know, for some reason, you hit it off with the hiring manager, and you get hired. I have never seen a case where, you know, all the factors said, we need to hire this person. This person could be great, all the interviews, everything. And somebody said, yeah, but he took that test, mm-hmm. and the test results showed that they weren't very good at such and so. I've seen hiring managers say, well, you know, you can't rely on those things. And then conversely, I've never seen a case where somebody did, you know, brilliantly on the test, and everything else was falling apart. But somebody said, well, they tested well, so let's hire them. I mean, usually that test, those results always get put in a matrix of factors. It's just nice to know, well, what is that matrix, and where do the assessment results fit into that?
Well, and I think so it goes back to one of the questions then, you know, how valuable then really are these tools, and are they accurate and are they reliable?
Well, I think, you know, some of the main ones like StrengthFinders, DISC, Myers-Briggs, they are valuable. I mean, they have some value. They tend to be comparative. In other words, they compare you to other people, your scores against other scores. And so they end up putting you in kind of classifications or labels or boxes.
Yep.
And that's a problem, but that still is at least some insight. But the real problem with them is they tend to represent that they are so-called scientific, but in reality, they're all actually quite subjective in how they get their information. The objectivity of a test is not determined by the printout of the results. It looks like it came out of a computer. It's got statistical norms. It looks very scientific. Where did that information come from? It's almost always a forced set of choices that you have. Are you like this or you like this? And you get to pick. Well, that's self-appraisal. That assumes, A, that you know yourself well enough to give the right answer, and B, that you're not influenced by the outcome of the test to make it come out one way or the other. I think a real more objective way of looking at people is to go back to actual behaviors that they've actually demonstrated in real-life settings, which, of course, is what we do in our assessment, the System for Identifying Motivated Abilities. And so now you're looking at actual behaviors. It's like looking at game film from an athlete, and you're not looking at hypothetical scenarios. You're looking at what actually has happened in a series of incidents in this person's life, and you start to see that there's a very distinctive pattern to their behavior that's quite accurate to describing how they do life.
Exactly. For those of you just tuned in, we're speaking with Bill Hendricks, who leads the Giftedness Center. And Bill and I both are licensed in the System for Identifying Motivated Abilities. And in fact, what I often say to individuals who really want to get that deep tissue understanding of themselves is I say, you know, this is data that you can run, but you can't hide from.
Right.
Because it is embedded and it comes through your own life stories.
Right. And it's all positive information. That's the other thing. What we're able to do is look at core strengths, and we don't shame anybody with their, you know, toilet training and skeletons in the closet and all that stuff. We're trying to figure out what's the best of who they are, and it's always very exciting to bring that to light so that they can really lean into that in their job or career and find a lot of meaning and purpose as a result.
Well, and also actually lean into that information during the interviewing process, because, for example,
absolutely.
We had a guest here on the show, Junie Rosemarin, out on the East Coast, and Judy is all about this power of storytelling. And so when you're in an interview scenario and someone asks you about, well, tell us about how you've managed cost. And boy, instead of, you know, spitting out the the academic steps you go through and planning and so on, if you could sit there with your eyes alive and tell them about a time that you saved a product introduction by taking, you know, whatever cost out of the way in which you all did work and who got involved to have it happen, at the same time you're sharing with the prospective employer your energy around and belief in the criticality of doing that.
Right.
Or not, by the way, which might indicate that maybe we shouldn't put you in a cost reduction initiative then.
Well, you're speaking out of confidence at that point. You know, confidence is like Dizzy Dean used to say, it ain't bragging if you can do it.
Right.
And if you know in your gut what your strengths are, then you can speak to those with real confidence. Confidence always is the trump card when it comes to a hiring situation.
So what role, you know, in your belief system then, Bill, should assessments like this play in the hiring decision process?
Well, I think that if an employer really wants to understand, as I said, how this person adds value, what they need to look for is, what does this tell us about what they do well and they enjoy doing? In other words, their abilities and their motivation. What's their real core gift there? So you now know how this person wants to add value, as opposed to, how do we use this to keep this person out of the job? I mean, there's kind of a game that sometimes gets played where we assume that when somebody comes to apply for a job, they're going to tell us whatever they want to tell us, and our job is to figure out, you know, what doesn't add up in it.
Isn't that true? It's like this.
Yeah, it's not a very honest way to play the game on either side. I'd rather see people say, here's what I do well. Would that be of use here? You know, the employer say, here's what we are looking for here. Let's see if that's something that fits you. And if it fits, great. If it doesn't fit, great. Never hire somebody into a poor job fit, because next to a bad marriage, there's nothing worse than a bad job fit.
It's going to catch you in due time.
It will.
And I have another thought to offer our listeners if they have not gone through any kind of assessment, that it can be a wonderful anchor to help them focus the search they're going through, whether that be to be stronger where they currently are, to shift. But the other thing is, if in the event you're being interviewed for an opportunity and assessment is not part of the process, let me tell you how powerful it is to be able to offer as additional data, by the way, let me share with you my SEMA report or some other assessment you've gone through, so I can really bring to light some real data to help you understand why I'm so passionate about wanting to become or continue in the sales field. Or that, you know, really, if I'm going to become a team leader for you, you know, I don't want to go beyond 5 to 8 people as opposed to a group of 20.
Right.
And that it's actually, you know, really a competitive edge.
It is. It shows that you've been intentional about understanding yourself and how you add value. It's a very impressive thing to do to in a hiring situation.
That's very good. Well, for individuals who are interested to learn more about the SEMA process, how could they get a hold of you, Bill?
Well, certainly at our website, thegiftedness.center.com, thegiftedness.center.com, or they can email me at billh@thegiftedness.center.com, or call us at 214-665-9581.
And your advice then to people, Bill, who find themselves, you know, having to go get the assessment or take the test then, is, you know, you're going to need to do that as part of the hiring process, but if you have additional data to present at the same time, more power to you, right?
Absolutely. And whatever you do, once you start to find out any kind of information about yourself, however you find out about it, the key is make use of it. So many of these things people go through, it goes in a folder, you know, in their desk, and that's the last we hear of it. And that's kind of a waste. Always take advantage of an opportunity for insight. It may not be all the insight you could get. It may not even be the best and most accurate information about you, but it's something. And always then see, how could I apply this in my work to make myself more productive, more effective, and ultimately more satisfied.
Absolutely. And bring that back to bear on a continued basis and keep that document fresh. Bill Hendricks from the Giftedness Center, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you next month.
Great. Thanks.
You betcha.
What were you born to do? Every human being is born for a purpose. What's yours? The Giftedness Center has helped thousands of people find and follow their purpose by discovering their giftedness, not just what they can do, but what they were born to do. Knowing your giftedness is the key to making wise choices for how you work and how you live your life. Visit thegiftednesscenter.com or call 214-665-9581. The Giftedness Center, an affiliate of SEMA International. Isn't it about time you figured out what to do with your life? Call today, 214-665-9581.